Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Jeremy. Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? If you want to contact the programme, 51551 ray@rte.ie. And if you have jokes like this, please don't contact the programme. This is Kieran's dad's joke. Or is it Kieran's joke that he sent to his dad and is now his dad's joke? I accidentally swallowed a bunch of Scrabble tiles. The next time I go to the bathroom, it could spell disaster. They're going to get worse and worse because you know what's on the horizon. Christmas, yes. And you know what Christmas brings? Christmas crackers. And you know what Christmas crackers brings? Yeah. Jokes. Bad jokes. Which are worse? Christmas cracker jokes or dad jokes? Well, they're just all bad jokes, aren't they? They're just all bad jokes. Old Moore's Almanac is out for 2022. You know, it's published annually in November. And it started, I think, back in 1760 or something like that. And back in the day, it was a very useful publication because it would give the tables of moon and tide times and transport information and very useful information for people who worked the land and people in the community, in rural communities, when there was no internet. Now, of course, the internet's here, so it has changed. So it includes a lot of editorial features, and it also includes predictions. And these seem to be the most popular part of Old Moore's Almanac. And definitely the predictions are the things that are getting the attention today in the newspapers from the Irish Examiner. What's in store for Ireland in 2022? Well, we'll have a landslide. And that's not referring to the result of a general election. That's a landslide. A giant wave, an earthquake, a heat wave, a drought, and a huge dump of snow. And they also say that Dublin will win the football, Limerick will win the hurling. Well, they're not taking too many risks there. I was just reading there about it in Wikipedia. And it says, the in-house psychic, this is the person who makes these predictions, remains anonymous, often quoting that he, so we know it's a he, likes to stay under the radar and away from public life. And copies of Old Moore's Almanac from 1914 onwards are available in the National Library of Ireland. Wouldn't it be interesting to go back to them all, look at their predictions for the next year and see if any of them came to pass? That'd be an interesting study. Anybody up for that? Maybe not. If you're looking for a little bit of escapism, you could do worse than watching the documentary we watched last night on Netflix. 14 Peaks, Nothing is Impossible. Nirmal Nims Purja is a Nepalese man who has superhuman powers. He climbed 14 of the world's 8,000 metre plus peaks in less than 7 months. Included in those 14 are Everest and K2. So they're peaks in Nepal, Tibet, Pakistan, China. And he had to do them all 14 of them, in 7 months. It's an amazing documentary. He's an amazing man. He was in the Gurkhas and then he was part of Special Forces in the British Army. And the big thing, and this is this makes complete sense, that he felt that his fellow countrymen and women weren't being recognised for the amazing amount of work to do in mountaineering. So it was always A, B or C from America or Canada or the UK or Spain with a Sherpa. And oftentimes the Sherpa wasn't even named. And most of these Sherpas who climb Everest and lug up all the luggage and the canisters of oxygen are Nepalese. So he wanted to show that these people are amazing climbers in their own right. And he's Nepalese as well. So this was a huge thing for him and his countrymen and his country. And in doing the 14 peaks, he had time to save two people from the side of various mountains. His mum was going through ill health during it all as well, which is a sort of a spine to the whole thing. But you'll just be in awe of this man. Nirmal Nims Purja. We must try and get him on and talk to him. He's 38. I think he lives in the UK now. It'd be great to talk to him. And he's the man. Remember that picture from a few years ago? I think it was 2019. It could have been 2018. And it did the rounds. It was everywhere. I remember seeing it in a number of papers and on various social media platforms. It was that picture of Everest and all the climbers snaking up. There was a sort of a traffic jam because, you know, they only have a window sometime in May where the weather is right and everything's right. And that's when everybody plans their expeditions. And anyway, he took that picture. He was the man who took that picture because he was on his way down. He looked back up and he saw this snake of climbers winding its way up the side of Mount Everest. And he took that picture and it went viral. That's the man. Nirmal, name is Purja, 14 peaks, nothing is impossible. And the name of his sort of his project was Project Possible, because everybody he spoke to before he did it said, that's impossible, that's impossible. So he decided to call it Project Possible. There's a lot of talk, isn't there? We don't know yet whether the cabinet are going to say that children have to wear masks in school. And if we get that news, we will bring it to you as we come. But we're going to speak to Colman Nochter later on. He is a resident child psychotherapist, and ask him for his advice, because it looks like it's going to happen. So we're preempting that, and we're going to speak to Colman about what you should do as a parent in communicating to your children that they have to wear masks for the greater good, and how you would do that. And this is a related email that came in overnight to ray@rte.ie. Ray, I'm a bundle of confusion. I got an email from our school saying that there is a child in my child's pod positive for COVID and that I need to do antigen tests every 2 days. If the test negative and are symptom free, they can continue to go to school. Now, I got through to the HSE number that they gave me and I have tests arriving in the post tomorrow, but I have no idea what to do beyond that. My child is 6 years old and would barely take a spoon of Calpol from me, so I don't know how sticking a swab up his nose is going to go. I'm worried that I will do it wrong, Lee, or hurt him or something. I know it's essentially a cotton bud and I'm getting all het up over this, but I just want to make sure that I'm doing the right thing. It's been a long road for parents over the last year and a half, Ray. We are very much learning as we go along. I think everybody is. All the language and methods still seem so foreign to me. Homeschooling, pods, isolating, sanitising, masking. I thought the biggest problem we would have had to do with starting school 2 years ago. And the biggest problem, I thought, would be Matt's homework. My son is resilient and is going with the flow. But as parents, we're the ones that are providing that flow. And frankly, I'm frazzled. Like I said, we want to do the right thing. We want our children to be able to stay in school and have some sort of normality. See their friends, learn, not worry about a pandemic. Why am I writing this? I guess I'm venting, but I'm also looking for help. Does anyone out there have tips on how to do regular antigen tests on a squirmy 6-year-old? If they have to wear masks in class, can someone out there please recommend the best ones to me, and how to explain to my glasses-wearing son that he needs to keep it on? Well, we'll answer the final one hopefully today with Colman Nochter. We did back in the day when Lidl or Aldi announced that they were selling antigen tests. That seems like a lifetime away. We did an antigen test here in studio. And I remember the same day Tony Holland came out and said that we shouldn't be doing it, and he didn't recommend that people use them. And now everybody's using them. So maybe we might, before the end of the week, get somebody in and I'll do an antigen test again and maybe seek their advice on how to do it with a child. So we'll definitely do that before the end of the week. What else is there? The calendar competition. Yeah, we're finalising the prize. It looks like it's going to be similar to last year in that we're going to get the winner. We're going to get the calendar printer. And we got that done last year and it was a great prize. And then we have Canon cameras for the runners up. So we're going to get on to, we've gone on to them already, Walsh Colour Print. So they've agreed to print the winning calendar, and we'll give you more details about them and that in the coming days. And Canon have agreed to give us 4 EOS 2000D cameras for the 4 group winners, category winners. And just to draw your attention to some of the ones that we've got in, they're coming in, and get them into us. The Ray D'Arcy Show, RTE, Donnybrook, Dublin 4, because we need to have a hard copy of it before we mention it. Hello to everybody in St. Mary's of the Angels in Beaufort in County Kerry. And they've been doing a calendar for the last 4 years, and some lovely photographs of the area down there. It's a beautiful part of the country anyway, so it photographs well. There's an Irish hare who got a mention yesterday with Christoph Schwitzer, who's the head man in the zoo. He was talking about getting hares, Irish hares, into the zoo. Anyway, there's one in that calendar, an Irish hare in Glen Bay. There's Skellig Islands. There's a couple of kingfishers from Killorglin, swallows from Killorglin. And there's male goldfinch from Glenbey. Anyway, that's a beautiful calendar. And it's €16 and it's available from SaveSt.MarysOfTheAngels.com. SaveSt.MarysOfTheAngels.com. And that's in the competition, this year's competition for charity calendars and good cause calendars for 2022. We're staying in the same neck of the woods. The Kilmoily Art Group have sent us in a beautiful calendar. And it's in aid of Child Vision. And it's a group of people who gather in Sandra's house in Kilmoily. I think it's every Wednesday. And Sandra teaches them how to paint. And these are a selection of their paintings. And alongside each of the paintings, one for every month, there is a recipe. Some of them are related to the picture, some of them are not. Anyway, there's Ballyhaig Races, oil on canvas by Mary Brick. And there's Blennerville acrylic on canvas paper by Liz Brown. And alongside that is a recipe for cauliflower tabbouleh, if you don't mind. And there's May's Shop, Strand Road. That's Mary Brick again. And smoked salmon frittata is the recipe there. And there's a still life of pears by Colette Dalton. And pear and almond flan is the recipe there. And there's my favourite one is Walk with Dad. It's a lovely, just looking at a man and his son. And they're sort of ankle deep in the water looking out. At one of those lovely views, those many views that they have along the coastline of Kerry. And that's by Joan Fitzgerald. Anyway, get those into us and we'll announce the winners closer to Christmas, actually in Christmas week. Christmas week. Let's see what you're saying at 51551. I wonder, did last year's Oldmoor see the ABBA reunion? I doubt that they did, Brendan Conroy. But we could check it up, couldn't we? We should get our hands on it and just see. Scientists have just discovered a new element named AHA. Also known as the element of surprise. Boom, boom. Oh, God. AHA, the element of surprise. Connor, thank you for that. Thank you. Thank you. Sorry. Sorry, I didn't do that justice at all. I didn't know it was a dad joke. Scientists have just discovered a new element named AHA, also known as the element of surprise. Hey, there you go. In Old Moors, some things they do have right, and that is probably due to the amount of stuff they'd predict. Ah, yeah. So some of the stuff has come to pass. Because if you throw enough at the wall, some of it will stick. Isn't that what the old saying, Michael? So they're obviously going to have something right, yeah. I'm not surprised that the psyche at Old Moors Almanac wishes to remain anonymous with predictions like that. Earthquakes, tidal waves. It deserves the scorn of every sceptic. Dare I say it in this world that we live in? It's just a bit of fun. It's just a bit of crack. Have we lost our sense of humour? I really hope that we never lose our sense of humour, lads, because we need that. It's a great coping mechanism and we're very good at it. We're very good at having the crack and seeing the funny side of things, and it's hugely important for our mental health. Now, you will have heard that Barbados has declared themselves a republic, and as part of the ceremony yesterday in Bridgetown, Rihanna was declared as a national hero. There was a very interesting Irishman's diary a while back, or maybe today in the Irish Times, and it outlines how Barbados is home to one of the lesser celebrated Irish diasporas. They're known as Redlegs, and by other vaguely disparaging terms reflecting their status as misfits. Rihanna, for example, was born Robin Rihanna Fenty, and her surname is inherited from a Bajan Irish father, presumably a variation of Fenton, Fenty Fenton. And there's also other Irish-sounding names on the east coast of Barbados. Downey, Dixon, McCarthy, O'Brien, Norris and Banfield are all featured. We have a little bit of a recording now of the Prime Minister of Barbados, Mia Motley, announcing that Rihanna Fenty has been announced as a national hero. Let's see, where is it there? I think over there we go, yeah.
On behalf of a grateful nation, but an even prouder people, we therefore present to you the designee for National Hero of Barbados, Ambassador Robin Rihanna Fenty. May you continue to shine like a diamond and bring honor to your nation by your words, by your actions, and to do credit wherever you shall go. God bless you, my dear.
That's nice, isn't it? I'll tell you about our quiz in a moment. 5 on 5 5 on ray at rte.ie. We will play that. Rihanna, national hero in Barbados and related to the Fenty's determined feckin'. I just made that up. And that is Diamonds on RT Radio 1. 5 on 5 5 on ray at rte.ie. Steve has been on. And he says, robber walks into estate agents and shouts, "Nobody move!" I haven't heard it before. It's not bad. It's clean. Back in the day, I was being chatted up by a guy in a club, says this listener. I wasn't interested, so when he asked me what I did for a living, I told him I wrote the jokes in the Christmas crackers. His response was, "Oh, cool. I always wondered who did that." I backed away slowly. Well, yeah, you see, somebody has to do it. It's a bit like figs in the fig rolls, isn't it? Somebody has to write the jokes for the Christmas crackers. Mind you, a person I know is an underwater archaeologist. And back in the day when she was being chatted up and then she was asked, you know, "Well, what do you do for a living?" She would have said, "I'm an underwater archaeologist." And of course, nobody believed her. And it's true. So people, you know, there are people who do strange jobs. And when asked what they do, they can only answer honestly, unlike you. 5 on 5 5 on Radio RT. Yes, Chris, call out. He's shouting in my ear. Shouting in my ear. To tell you about Reeling in the Ears. Yeah, we've bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we're looking for two people to come on and answer three questions each on what they hear. Yes. Short clip gets you 2 points. Long clip gets you 1 point. You see. So, do you want to come on? Are you brave enough? There is a prize. And we're back. In bed, so to speak, with the lovely people from the Castleknock Hotel. A two-night stay with breakfast on both mornings, dinner on one evening with a bottle of wine. And you can get into the festive spirit at Castleknock Hotel with a cosy and relaxing two-night break. You check in, get cosy with a selection of festive treats waiting on you. Mince pies, gingerbread men, glass of bubbles, Irish coffee or Christmas cocktail. The hotel has a wide range of gift voucher ideas from golf to deluxe spa days. You can find out more at castleknockhotel.com. castleknockhotel.com. Now, two people, we're looking for two people after 4 o'clock. That's a good prize. But first you have to answer our qualifying question. Which Caribbean island country declared themselves a republic yesterday? Which Caribbean island country declared themselves a republic yesterday? 1850-715-900. That's 1850-715-900. And good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 5 on 5 5 1. Now, you never know when you may be called into action to save a life. After rescuing four people in the last decade, one man is reminding others of the importance of life buoys, and he's on the line now. Daniel Mee, good afternoon.
Hey, Ray, how are you keeping?
Good, good to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so you've an important message today. To deliver to our listeners, and it's about life buoys. And this, as long as I can remember, there's been public information ads on the telly telling people not to mess with life buoys, leave them alone, they're lifesavers. And yet people continue to do it, don't they, Daniel?
They do. I guess when the weather comes around that people are near the water and want to get in the water, excitement kicks in and sometimes common sense can kick out.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you take into the accounts that I've been involved in, out of those four occasions, two most definitely saved a life. And in one instance, the third would have been really needed. I didn't have it. And I had to put myself at risk, and I actually injured myself because I didn't have a ring close to hand. So they are vitally important to be kept around. And when they are around, to be maintained and kept available.
Yeah,
definitely.
And the brilliant thing about a life buoy is even if you're not a strong swimmer yourself, if you have access to a life buoy, you can save a life by just throwing it into the water.
Absolutely. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. In the incidents that I've been involved in, not getting in the water was priority, right? You don't want to get in the water unless you absolutely have to. So with what you just mentioned, being able to get them out there and get them to those people is key. It's vital for so many different aspects. First of all, if the person is not a strong swimmer and they start to get into panic, that ring just gives them something to hold on to, or that buoyancy aid gives them something to hold on to. So once they have that, the panic can settle a little bit, and then that in itself gives them a bit of time, right? Because they get to calm themselves and possibly can see what's going on. And then, of course, if they're not a strong swimmer, just something to hold on and keep them afloat is vital as well.
Hmm. So you're not a lifeguard or anything. You sort of work part time on the River Shannon, and you live close to the River Shannon. So you've just been in four different situations where you were called upon to save a life.
Absolutely. I guess I'm lucky that where I am, I have access to the Shannon and the surrounding areas, and it's just been through circumstance that I've been there. But no, I'm in no way trained in this at all. I'm comfortable in the water, but saying that, before I get in the water, I do make sure that, you know, I'm able to deal with what's going on. I never want to put myself in risk or anybody else at risk, because then there's more bodies to save, right? Mm. So for anybody that might be listening today and does find themselves in a circumstance where they are able to assist somebody, make sure that you are physically able to assist them first before you do that. Don't go jumping in the water, first of all. Always look at what aids are available to you, like the buoyancy aids and the life rings. And if those are accessible to you, absolutely use those. On RTE this week, I watched, I think it was on Sunday night or Monday night, a fantastic presentation that was going on down in Athlone, where they're now bringing out these remote buoys where you can actually throw them onto the water and drive them out like little remote boats.
Uh-huh.
And that gets them safely to the people. Yeah. And that's fantastic. It's the first time I've seen that. It was just pure coincidence. But it just totally eliminates anybody else ever having to get into the water.
Yeah.
And then it also removes the distance that you can actually get a ring out further to somebody who's in need of it. It was fantastic. It was a great thing done by RTE.
On one of those four occasions, somebody else had already got in to help the person, and they got into a little bit of difficulty, and then you had to step in.
They did, through no fault of their own. I think in that particular situation, there was two factors that hindered them. One was the water temperature. The water was very cold, and that absolutely played a factor. The second factor is where they got into the water to assist the person was actually at the fastest flowing current of the Shannon in that particular area.
Yeah.
So those were two factors that were against them. The current was against them, and then the water temperature. When I came on the scene, I was lucky from two different things. I spend time in the water in the winter with a bit of surfing and kayaking when I get the opportunity, as well as that I do the ice baths and the cryo baths. So my body is quite used to being in those temperatures. But the other factor was I knew those waters, and within a minute of me arriving on the scene, he had moved down to an area where the water had slowed right down. Because the water had widened, and even though he was getting washed further away from the shore, the current had actually slowed down to an acceptable pace for me to be able to get in and then retrieve them.
Yeah, it is. And as well as the lifebuoys, leave them alone, don't mess with them. The other important message is that you need to be aware of your own limitations, and that we've heard so many tragedies that involve two people where one person gets into difficulty and then somebody goes in to help them and they get into difficulty as well. So you don't want that to happen. What's your story? What sort of accent is that?
Zimbabwe.
Right. Okay. And yeah. why did you end up in Ireland?
Zimbabwe. So we left, my parents made the move from Zimbabwe in the late 90s. There was a lot of political stuff going on, and it became quite unsafe. My dad's business was in the farming community, and the economics got quite bad. So they moved. I was only young. I was only a teenager at the time. So you do what mommy and daddy tells you to do.
Yeah.
And we moved over here. We have ancestry over in this part of the world. So it gave us an opportunity to move out. And interesting enough, I honestly believe if I hadn't found Carrick and Shannon, where I live, and the waterways of the Shannon, I probably would have moved on and ended up in sunnier climates like Australia or something.
Yeah, Carrick and Shannon is a lovely, vibrant town that has an awful lot to offer, doesn't it? Yeah, as well as the Shannon, it is. There's just an energy about Carrick and Shannon that I feel every time I'm up there. And you're settled now. You have family of your own.
Yes, settled. Two kids. My son Alex, who is 9, and my daughter Sarah, who is 6. So we're well and truly settled now.
Okay.
At this stage.
One thing I want to talk to you about before I let you go. You mentioned it there, the cryobats. So this is going into immersing yourself in freezing cold water or ice or what?
So some of the bats can be actually made of ice. I use Carrick cryobats. which work out of our Aura Leisure Centre in Carrick-on-Shannon. And they basically, what happens, the temperature is chilled down to between 0 and 2 degrees, and then you get to submerge. Depending on your ability and your aptitude, you'll hold up to 10 minutes. But there's multiple reasons for it. My main reason for it is recovery, muscle fatigue. I work out quite a bit. I do a couple of things like running, cycling. I do jiu-jitsu.
Right.
And so I find this fantastic for recovery, as well as just the mental aspect that you've got to, for that 10 minutes, you've got to endure this this tolerance. Right. I find it very good in many aspects.
Listen, you're an amazing man, saving 4 lives over a decade, and I'm sure you will be available, you know, if it ever happens again. Hopefully it won't. Hopefully you won't be called upon. Can I recommend that documentary to you, the 14 Peaks? It's on Netflix. I think you're the type of person who will enjoy it. Daniel Mee, thanks so much.
Great.
Thanks, Daniel. Bye now.
Great. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Take care.
Bye now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I was saved from choking a week before my wedding, says this texter. I think of the man who saved my life very regularly. I'm sure the people who Daniel saved over the last 10 years think of him quite regularly as well. Now, a statistic for you. Irish men under the age of 50 are being warned to check their heart health to avoid premature death due to heart attacks. The Irish Heart Foundation are running a campaign called Reboot Your Life, aimed at reducing the number of men who die from heart attacks in Ireland. About 1,000 men died from heart attacks last year. Dr. Andrew Brown, consultant cardiologist and medical director of the Irish Heart Foundation, is on the line now. How are you doing, Angie?
Hi, good afternoon, Ray.
Good to talk to you. Now, heart attacks are one of the big killers.
That's right. Exactly. And unfortunately, men really aren't aware of that, I think. We did a survey in September and it showed that 1 in 4 men really don't consider their heart health a priority. And that's quite worrying because, as you said, nearly 38% of all premature deaths, so that's people under the age of 65, are due to cardiovascular disease, and 73% of those were men. And as you said, in 2020, nearly 1,000 men died of a heart attack. And if you look at the age group 45 to 54, 217 men died of either a heart attack or stroke. So it is an issue. And the good news is that 80% of these premature deaths, so these are in the younger age group, they are preventable. So that's really why we're suggesting that men try and reboot their lifestyle.
Okay. So there are a number of things, obviously, they can do. But before all we talk about all that, what sort of screening goes on and what can men do to find out if they do have a sort of a problem coming down the tracks?
So a lot of the things that we need to do, you actually need to go and see a healthcare professional to get your blood pressure checked. You can't know what your blood pressure is until you measure it, because very few people get symptoms if their blood pressure is high. So you need to get your blood pressure checked, you need to have your cholesterol checked with a blood test, and you need to have your blood sugar checked again with a blood test. And then obviously you can weigh yourself at home, and you know, you might know your height, so you can work out your BMI, or a healthcare professional can do that for you. So you really need to visit a healthcare professional to get those measurements, and it's important that you know those measurements, and so that you can see how you're doing, and maybe when you go back for a future test, you can see, oh great, my blood pressure's lower, or my diet's been working, my healthy lifestyle's working, my weight's come down, and my blood sugar's now normal, and my cholesterol's improved. So it is important to sort of go and get those checked, but then make a note of it and be aware of what they are for yourself, so that when you try and introduce these different lifestyle measures, which we'll talk about, you can then hopefully see that there has been a benefit down the line.
Okay, so Reboot Your Life, and you're targeting younger men because, as you say, they seem to pay scant attention to their heart when it comes to their health. So why do you think that is? We constantly hear about men and their health and their reluctance to engage with doctors and health professionals.
Well, I think women tend to have a lot more contact with healthcare professionals when, you know, younger women will go to get an oral contraceptive pill, you'll get your blood pressure checked and have that contact. And then later on, maybe when someone's pregnant, you'll go and have all your health checks through your pregnancy and after pregnancy. So you'll have a lot of contact with healthcare professionals that way. And the other way is often if you have children, women usually more than men will take the children to see the GP, and again we'll have contact. So I think throughout the life of a woman you'll tend to get more contact with healthcare professionals, whereas men don't generally have that contact. So I think they're a little bit more anxious about going there. They don't want to trouble somebody. They feel they should be fit and strong and healthy, and you know, tend to ignore any signs and symptoms that they may have. And I think that's the reason.
And at the Irish Heart Foundation, from what age would you recommend that men have a regular, maybe annual, health check?
Turns a bit, little bit on your family history. If you've got a strong family history, then really in your 30s, you need to be thinking about getting your cholesterol checked and your blood pressure checked. But certainly when you're around 50, you very much need to go and get your blood pressure checked and your cholesterol checked then, because what you do then has an impact. You know, it affects what's going to happen over the next 10, 20, 30 years. So what you're doing when you're younger will benefit you as you're older, because we always all want to live longer, healthier lives, free of any disease. Mm. And that's the aim, really.
Yeah, isn't there a new measure now? Well, recently enough new. They're talking about life expectancy, and then they're talking about healthy life years, aren't they?
Exactly. So there's no point living a long life if you've been struck down by an illness and you can't do all the things you want to do. So it's having a good quality life and a healthy life. Exactly.
Okay, reboot your life then. What are you recommending in the Irish Heart Foundation?
So if you go to our website, you'll see there's lots of tips. It's eating healthily, sitting less, and I think it's important to remember sitting for long periods is actually a risk factor, and I don't think many people realise that. It's equivalent to smoking and high blood pressure, so it's really an important risk factor. We know that in Ireland, particularly with COVID, people working from home, people are sitting for long periods, perhaps over 7 or 8 hours a day. So you need to get up, walk around very regularly. Don't sit in front of your computer for hours on end. Make sure you have plenty of breaks. You'll see on our website there's lots of little exercises. And then just getting regular physical activity over and above sitting for long times, because your physical health means that you'll have better mental health. It'll reduce your blood pressure, your risk of diabetes and obesity, and also your social health. So I think it's doing things that you enjoy, whether that's going to a gym class, whether it's going to play golf, whether it's walking with a friend, swimming, riding, whatever is something, a physical activity that you enjoy. So we'd like you to do moderate intensity movement really for 30 minutes, at least 5 times a week. You need to do some muscle strengthening exercises and balance movements. So again, we have lots of little tips and videos on our website, and we have some challenges for people to do. And then, of course, then the next thing is you want to eat more healthily. So cutting down on the amount of alcohol that we drink. And again, I think we all forget that alcohol is completely full of calories. So it's another reason that we're all putting on weight. We're sitting at home doing less exercise, and a lot of us are taking a little bit more alcohol than we used to. So we really need to cut down on the amount of alcohol that we're drinking. Have a lot more fresh fruit, vegetables, chicken and fish. And kind of cut down on all the saturated fats, so the animal fats, the pastries, the biscuits, the cakes, things like that.
It's all common sense, really, isn't it?
Actually, it is, yeah, it's easy.
When do we lose sight of common sense, I wonder? When did that happen?
Well, Well, you know, I really think COVID has led to a lot of people's health getting worse because, you know, there's that low level of anxiety and stress is kind of a risk factor. You tend to sort of snack more, maybe smoke more if you smoke, drink more. You know, you do all those, the things are worse for you when you're stressed. And actually that makes it worse because you get into a negative spiral. So I suppose what we're trying to do is encourage people to get into a positive spiral, you know, so to break those habits. So again, there's a little booklet you can fill in. What are your barriers? What are the things? Why do you cheat? You know, to make you really think about why you can't break those bad habits. And it's changing your routine. Maybe having a glass of water instead of going straight for a glass of wine, you know, going for a walk instead of having a snack. Or if you're going to have a snack, have a healthy snack, have some hummus and carrots or an apple, something like that.
Okay, so Reboot Your Life, Irish Heart Foundation website, loads of tips there. Just while I have you on, because your name was mentioned in an article, it's from September now, but it struck me is it any wonder that people are confused? It was on the cover of the Irish Times and it read, physical activity may increase heart attack risk, study suggests.
Yes, that's right. And actually that was quite annoying because it was completely misleading and completely wrong. That the study didn't show that. The study looked at people in career, and it looked at people who were sedentary, people who did moderate exercise, people who did high intensity exercise, and they measured the change in calcium score over time. And in the high intensity group, they certainly did see more calcium in the arteries, but they didn't say that there was an increased risk of a heart attack or stroke. They didn't measure that. So there's no evidence that it increases your risk of a heart attack or a stroke. But they also found that in that group, the people were slightly older and had higher blood pressure. And we know that as you get older, the calcium in your arteries increases. And we know it increases if you have high blood pressure. But it also increases if we treat your high cholesterol with a statin. So we know the calcium is healing plaque. So you have an ulcerated area and then it heals and it becomes calcified. So the calcium is a marker that you have wear and tear in your arteries for whatever reason. And it should be taken in context with all the person's other risk factors to try and get what your overall risk is. So these are risk markers. And actually it's the soft plaque that tends to cause the heart attack.
Stuff,
so
yes,
if you have... Yeah, and then you get a clot forming to try and heal it. So it's the soft plaque, and this study didn't look at the soft plaque.
Okay.
So unquestionably, regular physical exercise is definitely good for you.
And good for your heart.
Exactly.
Ray, we got a free defibrillator from the Irish Heart Foundation. We fundraise for a box costing 600 euros to keep the AED warm, the Blessing and First Responder Service. Use it and teach us how to use it. It's not widely known that the Irish Heart Foundation do this. Maybe you could pass on the info for us. There you go. We've done that. And the government should provide free biannual health checks for anyone, male or female, who is over the age of 40, as we all know that prevention is better than cure. Stephen, last night. That's what I was talking about, screening. Would screening not work better? They do it for cancers, and more people die of heart attacks than of cancer, don't they, or do they?
That's right. Well, screening is different to risk assessment. You see, that when you're looking for a cancer, you're looking for a specific thing. So you might have a look, you might do a mammogram to look for a lesion, whereas this is a risk. So if you take someone at 30, they will have a very low risk. Whereas if you take someone at 80, they'll have a high risk. So we're doing a risk assessment. It has to be cost effective. You need to do no harm. So it's very different from screening for bowel cancer, for breast cancer. Where cardiovascular risk is in a continuum. We're all, our risk increases as we age. We get more wear and tear. So it's about reducing your risk.
Okay.
So to do it, so screening in a younger age group, unless you've got a very strong family history of a familial hypercholesterolemia, so then it's worth checking family. If you've got a family history of sudden death and you know what it is, then again it's worth checking. So if you know it's a specific disease, then it's worth screening the close family.
Yes, but it's
very different if you're taking a whole population. It's not cost effective, and we need to obviously spend money where it is cost effective.
Okay. And encourage people then to get their blood pressure checked, etc., as you said at the start of
this chat.
Exactly.
And we do screen Yeah, and screen higher risk people as they get older.
Dr. Andrew Brown, consultant cardiologist and medical director of the Irish Heart Foundation. Thanks so much for talking to us today. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we're waiting for word from today's cabinet meeting, but it seems likely to endorse NPHET's recommendations that children aged 9 and over wear masks in school and reduce indoor socialising, the play date or the panto. But it seems likely these won't be legal requirements and left as recommendations to schools and parents. To help us navigate, and you navigate through all of this, I'm joined on the line by child and adolescent psychotherapist Dr. Coleman Nocter. How are you doing, Coleman? I know you've written about masks in the past and you've written about it today. So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a divisive topic, Ray, because, you know, I was trying to say today was you can be pro-mask and just have some questions about it when it comes to children, you know. And I think there's a lot of people who would say that you know, my six-year-old wears a mask and he's fine, so we should get on with it. But if it's a developmental problem that's going to be created, we won't see that straight away. That doesn't come. If they're six now, what will they be like when they're nine? And it's just, all of this is an experiment, and we just need to be thinking about these things. And I would really love if it actually, if we said it was going to be 2 weeks and we actually stuck to that. Really worried about how children are seeing these messages, and they're kind of losing faith in the promises. You know, we said 2 weeks before, it ended up being months, you know, and when we, because they've also got all their activities cancelled as well, and the indoor activities have been cancelled over the next 2 weeks as well. I'd love it to actually be 2 weeks so that they could regain some trust in the adults in the room, because it's very hard to tell your child that they're going to have to be wearing a mask from tomorrow on with some certainty that it'll only be until the Christmas holidays, and come January you won't have to do it again.
Okay, and as you say, we're in an experiment, so there's no scientific research done one way or the other whether wearing a mask will have any developmental negative effect on children or whether it won't. So we don't know.
Yeah, and I think when we don't know, we should err on the side of caution. You know, that would be my view. And I think in terms of, like, if we do, when we do bring this in, like for this few weeks, could we put in more breaks during the day that children could be mask-free outside for a little while? Could we be creative around just appreciating that it might not be easy for children, especially those with communication disorders who, you know, might have dyspraxia or dyslexia or struggle with learning needs, that in actual fact trying to communicate through a mask can be really challenging. I teach in third level. I'm teaching with a mask to masked students all the time. It definitely creates a barrier, and it can be challenging to communicate what you want through that medium. And I think, you know, oftentimes we say the 9 to 12s are kind of, you know, they have language development, they should be fine. 9 to 12 is a big developmental milestone as well. There's a gap from being Dora the Explorer to TikTok. You know, there's quite a gap in that age group. And I have a 9-year-old and an 11-year-old, and there's a gap between them. And I think anything that has the potential to cause any developmental issue needs to be carefully thought out.
Okay. And what's your advice then to parents listening? How best to communicate the wearing of masks to your 9 to 12-year-olds?
Yeah, I suppose I'm worried also about the kind of vector narrative that children have at the moment. They're all the great unvaccinated at the moment, and they're kind of, there's that narrative that they're toxic and everything else. I do think that's getting in on them.
Is it?
Oh, it is. Yeah, I'm seeing it all the time. And you know, the idea that people's reaction to them, they're not immune to media headlines and how we speak about things. But from the point of view of, I think, and I'm seeing a lot of children struggling to go to school at the moment. But I think we should use the mask as a way of protecting yourself as well as protecting someone else, and use the tests as a gateway back to freedom, because we're going to have to do antigen tests, we're going to have to be doing things at home. That can be difficult, again, if a child is sensory issues and they can feel a bit persecuted by that. But the antigen test is to prove that you are okay to go back in, and so the outcome of it might be good. But again, it's a lottery, and I would say to parents, because around the 2 week promise, I think we have to be hopeful and we have to be optimistic in the when it comes to children. But if we promise 2 weeks and it turns out to be 2 months, I'm not so sure how good that's going to do the children's relationship with trust in the people and the adults in the room.
Okay, so you're advising not to say this is definitely only for 2 weeks, because we can't say anything is definite in the current climate.
Yeah, I think reassuring them that it'll be as short as possible, and as soon as it's safe to not do these anymore, that will happen, and that, you know, the people in the room are on your side here, and we want this to be to be something that doesn't become part of normal life, and that it's something we have to do for a time until we come out of this. And again, trying to support them through it. And again, that will be coupled with the cancellation of birthdays and everything else that are happening there too. And suppose, you know, offering them support around that. I mean, again, this was an issue last March when things get cancelled. It's the cumulative effect. Now we're back getting things cancelled again. And that's where the disparity is. The adults can still do what we do, but children are now effectively being disproportionately affected this time around. And of course, it's all relative. You know, people in ICUs and dying and everything else. But a birthday party to a six-year-old who's never had one is a big deal.
Hmm. It is important that we stress that there's no scientific research around mask wearing for children. So we don't know, because this is important.
No,
because
we don't.
I've heard people say with a definite sort of confidence about it, saying that this is going to affect them developmentally. But we don't know that. We actually don't know that.
No, and I can't say, because we haven't had a situation where a community of children were masked over a long period of time and longitudinally. We proved it.
Yes.
There's lots of short-term studies that much suggest that there's no issue, or they suggest there's huge issues. But a longitudinal study over time, we don't have that. So I can't say with any certainty this is going to cause a problem. But equally, someone else who's an immunologist can't say it won't.
Okay. You know? And you've written about it in the Irish Examiner today, so people can read that. And that advice, that to say that this is a gateway to freedom, is good advice. So
these are measures to help us to get us back to things, not to
normality. Yeah, eventually.
For sure.
I think we all need reassurance, not just the 9 to 12 year olds, Coleman.
100%.
Okay. Thanks very much, Coleman Nochtla. Thank you. Talk to you soon. Barbara, thank you very much. 5 on 5, 5 on Ray at RT.ie. I feel sorry for any child who wears glasses. They're a nightmare to wear with masks, says somebody. And what about children on the autistic spectrum with sensory issues? There's no way they could wear a mask all day in school. Clothes are a problem most days. Worried special needs mum. Well, I think they're making exceptions. Definitely going to. And these are just guidelines. They're not mandatory. So in the case of children with special needs, they won't have to wear a mask. That's my understanding. And somebody asked about, what about children who are hard of hearing? Same applies. As a speech and language therapist, I'm so concerned about the impact on communication, social interaction and emotional development. Totally agree with Coleman. This is not in the best interest of children. HEPA filters should be the first port of call, not blanket masks for children in the prime of their development. Concern is that health services, psychology and speech and language therapy cannot cope as it stands, let alone with the consequences with this in the future. We have to be careful as well about panicking and scaremongering, because as we pointed out there is no scientific research done on this. And if it's short term, I can't imagine there's going to be any long term effect if it's short term. Last week, I thought I was getting a heart attack. It took me an hour to decide to visit my GP. Within 12 hours, I was admitted to Bantry Medical Assessment. I was examined and got the OK. Great treatment and a great result. Not one mention of alcohol, says Peter. Tim O'League, West Cork. Peter, you'll have to clarify that. So they didn't say alcohol to you at all. I don't know what your situation is, so I can't comment. That's 5151 Ray at RTE.ie. We were talking about Old Moore's Almanac, or Moore's Old Almanac, sorry, Old Moore's Almanac, there it is. And we were looking at the predictions for this year from last year, just to see if any of them came true. So I'm just looking at it here. In Ireland, and this is what they were saying was going to happen this year, 2021, in Old Moore's Almanac that was published this time last year. So it says, life slowly returns to normal and by late summer, we're over the worst. Hugs, foreign travel, live music, standing at the bar in your local, it's all coming back in 2021. Yeah, they were right there, but it went again. Irish scientists make international news with a COVID-19 related breakthrough. Did that happen? I don't know if that happened. Taoiseach Micheál Martin faces a leadership challenge. Is that not every second week? The country is divided when a celebrity is caught breaking lockdown. These are all the predictions from Old Moore's Almanac. Housing is a huge issue once again. Well, you wouldn't need to be a psychic to predict that. We're all getting stuff delivered by drones. That didn't happen. Drought likely in May or June as the country sizzled. It was a good summer, but not that good. And an Irish bank is caught up in international fraud. I might have missed that one if it did happen. On the international stage, Trump becomes less relevant and spends the next few years desperately trying to avoid prison. Melania makes a break for freedom. That didn't happen. Light at the end of the tunnel for long COVID sufferers as researchers make new discoveries. I don't think that happened. Let's see if there's anything. They're all a bit grim. Travel is about to get easier with earbuds that can translate foreign languages. There's loads of apps that can translate foreign languages. So if you have Bluetooth and you have your earbuds, that's probably happened. So there you are. That's Old Moore's Almanac predictions for this year. Some happened, some didn't. Reeling in the ears, yes. You know the deal by now. We bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we have two people waiting on the line to answer three questions each on the clips we have put together. And there is a prize. Yes, there is. But where did I put the information on the prize? Yeah, it's our friends at the Castleknock Hotel. It's two-night stay with breakfast on both mornings, dinner on one evening and a bottle of wine. And they're getting you into the festive spirit out there in Castleknock Hotel. When you arrive, there's going to be mince pies, gingerbread men, glass of bubbles, Irish coffee or Christmas cocktail. And the hotel has a wide range of gift vouchers from golf to deluxe spa days. More at castleknockhotel.com. Hello, Anthony O'Brien.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. You're in Knocklong. In County
Limerick. I'm from Knocklong, Ray, but I'm working in Cork. I'm in Cork. Actually.
You're in Cork. So, okay. How far is it from your home place to where you work?
It's about an hour and 10 minutes.
Right. So you're doing nearly 2.5 hours round trip every day.
Yeah, look, it's like anything. You just get used to get up on time and leave on time, and you'll be fine. Sorry, sir.
Okay, right. And you're the foreman?
Yes, foreman with a construction company, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, did you show signs of becoming that type of person when you were a child?
She's a daughter, I don't know.
the reason I asked that was that my older brother, he was always going to be a manager of some description. From an early age, if he was asked to do something, he'd get one of us to do it for him. You know what I mean? He was the king of delegation.
He was lazy, so you mean, yeah.
He had a talent for management, you know. So yeah. He was always going to be a foreman or a manager, and that's turned out to be the case. You're working in Cork. Who's at home?
My wife, Teresa, is at home at the moment, and my son lives in Cork, my daughter lives in Tipperary, and she's listening at the minute with my three grandkids, so...
Right.
No pressure.
And she doesn't have a name, your daughter?
Yeah, Amy, yeah.
Amy, how are you, Amy?
And the three lads are Aveen, Sean and Adam.
Aveen, Sean and Adam, hello to you in Tipperary. Whereabouts in Tipperary are they?
In Tiptown.
Oh, Tiptown, right, okay. And will they come visiting over Christmas, or what's the arrangement or the plan?
Unfortunately, Ray, they will, I suppose, yeah.
You don't mean that.
No, I don't, no. I know they will, yeah. I suppose with COVID, we don't see as much of them as we would like, but look, you know, it is what it is. And we miss them and they miss us, but look, you know, just get on with it.
Get on with it, yeah. You're up against Anne Dunn, and this is mad, because you're from Knocklong, and Anne is from Knocklyon. So it's Knocklong plays Knocklyon. How you doing, Anne?
Not too bad, Ray. Yeah, yeah. How are you?
Good. So you're just in from the golf course?
I'm just in from the golf course. The old cobwebs blown off.
Yeah, how did that go?
Wild and windy, but sure. Someone has to do it.
How did that go?
I was, well, a few little watery ends, but...
right, okay.
It's always good to get out and have a bit of crack with the girls.
Yeah, and you have regular people that you play with?
Well, you kind of just put your name down, but I would have a few pals that we play with every, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you like to, you know, mix around and play with most people, you know.
And it's nice, you're getting the exercise, social interaction,
fresh air, all the stuff
that's good for you.
Exactly, yeah.
And who's at home?
Well... My husband is pretty good at quizzes, and the little specker has just gone out the door to walk the dog.
Just when you needed him most.
He's got no use to me at all. So there's nobody here except the cat who's meowing.
Well, you better name and shame him there.
Yeah, exactly.
What's his name?
Ray.
Ray, right, Ray, you fecker, you little fecker out with
little
the dog.
Fecker.
He probably knew he didn't want to be part of it, just in case it went horribly wrong.
No, he didn't know, because I was... So I just rang as I just came in the door, you know, and then he went out walking
right.
the dog.
Okay, yeah, okay, right. So. Right, it's Knocklong plays Knocklyon. You know the deal. three questions on clips. You can go for a short clip, and that's more difficult. You get 2 points for that. If you go for a longer clip, a little bit easier, you get 1 point for that. So there's a bit of strategy involved. And of course, the prize at the end, whoever scores the most. Good luck to you both, Anthony and Anne. Here we go. Okay, Anthony, to you first. We're on the telly. Do you want to go? And the year is 1989. Better tell you that as well. So, telly from 1989.
I go short, please.
Short, whoa. Right. So, which big TV charity event hosted by Gabe Byrne happened for the first time in May of 1989? And this is your short clip.
There'll be interviews with the famous in Studio One and a dipping in and out of concerts in Dublin, Cork and London.
So, big TV charity event hosted by Gabe Byrne happened for the first time in May of 1989.
Total blank, Ray.
No.
Ordered link.
People in Need telethon.
Oh.
See, you remember it now. It went on for 7.5 hours, and their aim, that first one, was to make a million. I think they reached that target. Okay, yeah. Early days, Anthony. No problem. Anne, okay. For you, we're on the big screen and at the Oscars from 1989. Do you want to go short or long?
Should we go short?
Oh, you're going short as well. Look at you. So, which Irish actor won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress in November of 1989? And here's your short clip for 2 points.
I'd like to thank Christy Brown just for being alive.
Brenda Fricker.
Is the correct answer. You get 2 points. Right, there you go. Right, Anthony. Anna's put it up to you now. 1989 is the year. We're in the charts. It's music. Are you going to go long or short?
I think I have no choice but to go short.
Yes, you sort of do. You sort of do, yeah. This Irish singer had a huge chart and radio hit with this song during 1989, so we'll take the name of the song or the name of the singer, and here's your short clip for 2 points.
In your eyes faint as a singing of a heart.
It's Mary Black.
It is Mary Black, yes. No frontiers. 2 points for you. It's even. But Anne has a question in hand. And we're still in the charts. It's still 1989, Anne. So what do you want to do?
Oh, well, if you gave me Mary Black now, I would have been happy. You know, I think I'd be boring and I'll go for the long.
Go for long for 1 point. Playing it safe. Okay. The name of the band or the name of the song on this big rock hit from 1989. And here's your long clip for 1 point.
Haven't got a clue.
Not a notion. No.
Not a notion. And that's the easy one.
Yeah, would you have known, Anthony?
Guns N' Roses, Sweet Child of Mine.
There you go. That's the way they fall,
fair,
isn't it?
Play to.
Yeah, so it's 2-2. It's down to the wire. Knock long plays, knock lion. Okay. oddly, you've gone for all the short ones, as opposed to being from knock long. You didn't go for any long ones yet. No, you're right. Sorry about that. We're in the news. We're in the news now, 1989. So, Anthony, what are you going to do? This is an important...
I've always been a gambler, Ray. I'll take both shots, please.
Right, short. Okay. Reporter Orla Gearn is reporting from a protest in Dublin about an incident in which square? And here is your short clip for 2 points. I'll turn it up there and make sure you can hear it.
Members of the Chinese Students' Union in Ireland gathered here outside the Chinese embassy tonight to express their horror.
Tiananmen Square.
Is the correct answer. Ooh. Well done, 2 points. And done, and knock line. He's
well,
put it up to you.
I have to go short.
You do have to go short.
I have to go short.
Okay, right. We're in the news, 1989. For 2 points, here's your question. Which British TV channel, which launched in February of 1989, is soccer pundit Jimmy Greaves talking about in this clip? And here it is for 2 points.
What I am actually excited about is the fact that people are going to be given a much wider choice.
So a British TV channel launched in February of 1989.
I'd say Channel 4?
No. It was Sky.
Sky.
There you go. Channel 4 has been around a good bit longer than that.
Would never have come up with Sky.
Would you have not? No. But no. There you go. You started well. So, unfortunately, Anthony was good. He ended well.
Well done, Anthony, and enjoy the holidays.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Anne.
Anne, I'm only going to send you out one mug because that little fecker is going to have the dog. I'll send you out two. One for you and one for Ray. Ray Ella. Okay.
All right.
Good talk, Anne. Mind yourself.
This is your namesake as
yes,
well.
Yes, yeah. Mind yourself, Anne. Thank you. Bye.
All right, bye.
Thanks,
Ray.
Anthony O'Brien, well done.
Thanks, Ray.
You and a person of your choice, probably your Teresa, are coming up to the Castleknock Hotel. You can find out what's in store for you at castleknockhotel.com.
Brilliant. Ray, could I just say happy wedding anniversary to my wife? We're married 34 years next Sunday.
Right, that's lovely. So there, you don't have to buy her a present now. You've won that for her. No, I'm joking.
Well, I'm glad you said that, no, Ray.
No, I keep up to that. I shouldn't have got involved.
Ray, could I just quickly say to my sister-in-law as well, Maria, she works in the HSE in Limerick. What a fantastic job they've done over the last 20 months with this terrible pandemic. I just want to say, look, you know, well done to everybody because it's been tough on everybody. But look, we get over it.
We will. Anthony, happy anniversary and thanks for that lovely thought there. Thanks, Anthony. Mind yourself.
Thanks very much, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Joe's been on. I'm living in Toronto and since the pandemic has started, the children have been wearing masks to school all day. When they go outside to play, they remove them. My three-year-old has no problem wearing a mask as I ensured to buy masks that were fun and interesting to him, which made it so much easier. I was thinking that as well. You want to be getting the fun ones as opposed to the medical ones if you're going to put them on children. No cases in our school since school started or even last year, thank God. But if I had the choice, I would prefer to send my children to school with a mask rather than having them at home missing out on the social side of school. Yeah, it's about balancing things, isn't it? And good afternoon, first time listener. Enjoying the show so far. No pressure. Here in the UK, you can get face masks which are in clear plastic. They act like a pair of glasses where the eyes, nose and mouth is open but behind clear plastic. Could be useful speaking to hard of hearing. All the best. That's Ash in Devon on the long wave working in the van. Nice to have you along, Ash. And it's truly international today. Chris and Tanya have been on to RaidRTE.ie. Just touching base from Almaty in Kazakhstan. Today, the last day of November 2021, it is November 30th. When at home, not since the 20th of the 1st, 2020, we were found in Middleton, County Cork. It is 21.27 here, so evening listening. Oh yeah, that's the time as opposed to the temperature. See, that's 27 minutes past nine. Some pics of our lovely mountains, amazing autumn weather here, but Mrs. Snow is returning soon and the next time she's bringing the overnight bags and won't leave until next March or April. That's a beautiful description. Thanks, Chris and Tanya. Lovely pictures of Kazakhstan and of you, and you look like you're having a great time there. Now, if you've been online over the last few days, you will more than likely have come across a picture of a Christmas card that's taken the country by storm, and I'd say if there was a chart for Christmas cards, this would be top of that chart. It's an illustration of President Michael D. Higgins, and he's putting Christmas lights all over one of his Bernese Mountain dogs. I don't know if it's Brode or Mishnock, but we can find out now because the creator of that card is sitting in front of me, 22-year-old Caoimhe Hennessy from Blanchardstown. How are you doing, Caoimhe?
Good, thanks, Ray.
I don't know why I had to give your age, but because I think at the beginning when we saw your picture, we thought we'd have to look for parental.
Yeah, it was asked consent. If for my dad's phone number to get permission from my parents.
Does that happen to you a lot?
Yeah, right. The baby face gets in the way.
Isn't that a good thing? Isn't it?
It is. I'll be glad of it in a few years.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. Congratulations!
Thank you.
It's such a lovely card. Now, is this to scale?
Pretty much, yeah.
So describe it to our listeners.
So it's an illustration of Michael D. Higgins and his dog is sitting beside him wrapped in Christmas lights and Michael D. is reaching over and putting a star on his head.
Ah, so as if he's the Christmas tree.
Yeah, so he's decorating like Christmas.
And is it Brode or is it Mishnock?
I kind of had Brode in mind, but it could be either. Mishnock could be behind him.
Interchangeable.
Yeah, exactly.
How did the idea come about?
Well, my college, I went to Ballyferma College and they contacted me a few weeks ago to ask if I wanted to represent the illustration course at Art Source in the ODS. So they pick a few graduates every year and we set up stands and sell our work, promote ourselves, all that.
Okay.
But I was trying to come up with more ideas for like interesting things that people would like to see and all that. And I had a self-portrait I did of myself with perler beads, you know, like the ones you iron and they melt together. I did a big one of them.
Oh, yes.
And my mom was trying to convince me to bring it with me, but I was kind of going, oh, like, who'd want to be looking at a self-portrait of me?
Yeah. So, that's a fair point.
Yeah. So, but first of all, I thought of, okay, well, I need to do a portrait of someone else then. And I thought of maybe I'll do Michael D. Higgins because he's so cute.
Yeah.
And, but then I was like, oh God, the perler bead thing will take me way too long. So I went with an illustration and then the image of the Christmas card just popped into my head. This is all.
Where were you when it happened?
In bed at 2 a.m.
Oh, right. Okay.
Like where I get all my best ideas. Yeah.
And then the Bernese dog and the brilliant. It's so brilliant.
Thank you.
Yeah. So then what? So you have an idea then. Then you have to execute it.
Yeah. So I spent the whole next day illustrating it and sending pictures to my friends to ask them what they thought and people giving suggestions and things like that. So a lot of people were hearing a lot from me that day, but it was illustrated with and sent off to the printer within 24 hours.
And it was always going to be a Christmas card, was it?
Yeah, it was, because some people asked for prints though, so I ended up getting a few prints in for ArtSource. But primarily it's supposed to be a Christmas card. I only ordered 100 the first time.
Yeah, so you went along to ArtSource and you had them available there.
Yeah, I had 100 of them in a box and went, oh sure, if I come home with a few it'd be grand. And ended up finishing. There was a premiere night of it on the Thursday and it was from like 5 until 9 o'clock in the evening, and I left it with 18 out of the 100. So
82 you sold.
Yeah, out of the, or well, near. And then the next 3 days, I was like, oh God, I have 3 more days of this exhibition. I have 18 cards left. So my dad, God love him, had to do a mad dash to a printer in Dunchoklin all the way up from Longford to the RDS. So had a few more in and then had to put in thousands of more orders in the following weeks.
So how many of you have you ordered in total?
Nearly 15,000. What? Today. Yeah.
15,000?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. It's like I just can't get over it. Like every time I look at my phone, I'm like, oh my God, more messages, people sending pictures or ordering there or whatever. It's crazy.
So explain its appeal then. What do you think?
People just love him. I knew people like loved Michael D. Higgins and his dogs, but not this much. Like it's mad.
But you've captured him wonderfully.
Thank you.
No, but it's a lovely, warm, fun illustration, and it's something that if you had it on your mantelpiece or wherever you display your Christmas cards, that every time you looked at it, it'd bring a smile to your face.
Yeah, I loved that at ArtSource because people would walk up and look at the table and just do a big either giggle or give me a big smile. Oh my God, it's so cute.
Right, yeah. Has it been reviewed by Dioris?
I don't know. You see, I haven't sent one in because I was kind of like, will he ever get it? It was my kind of thought, like an actual card. But a few people have been in touch, like the usual Irish thing of, oh, I know someone who knows someone who's involved somewhere. So it's been sent around. A few PDFs have been sent around with emails and all that.
Okay.
So I don't know if he'll have seen it yet, but hopefully at some stage.
I'd say he has.
Do you think so?
Yeah. I'd say now he probably gets so many gifts.
I know. Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, but a framed copy of a print of it.
I may get it into him for Christmas.
Yeah, it could be a regular there, a Christmas decoration in the Auris.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Position of prominence.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah, maybe get a huge one.
Yeah, a big blown up size of the wall.
Yeah. So 15,000.
Yeah.
Now, I was sort of joking there about the, you know, a chart for Christmas cards. No such thing exists. But have you any idea what your run-of-the-mill Christmas card would sell?
No idea. No. See, this is my first Christmas card. Yeah. So it's completely new to the game.
You're out of college in Ballyfermot, right? So what are you doing?
I'm hoping to mostly go into children's book illustration, but I worked on a children's book when I graduated last year. So I illustrated a children's book called Mindful Walk by Harriet Beth Carr, which was also had dogs in it. But I've worked on other things for small Irish businesses and logos and things in the past year. But the big dream is children's book illustration. Like that's the main goal. But Christmas cards seem to be my things accidentally. So,
is it difficult to get into? Because you know, my son knows that that's what he wants to be. Coincidentally, when he grows up, he wants to be an illustrator for children's books. So he knows all the ones that the one who did Roald Dahl. Who did Roald Dahl?
Is it Quentin Blake?
It is. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, God, that was a good
and then
quiz.
Did he do some of the David Williams first, and then somebody else took over? But they're quite similar.
I'm not sure. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's if you can get a really good writer.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That likes you. And that could be a lifetime partnership, couldn't it?
Yeah, I'd love to write my own as well. That's the big goal.
So what else is in your range of Christmas cards?
That's the only Christmas card. That's the only Christmas card I have, but it's gone down pretty well.
And you brought in, that's lovely of you.
No problem at all.
I think I have a bit of work for you as well.
Yeah, anytime.
That's lovely. You better mention your dad as well, because he's driven from Dunshaughton to Longford, back up to Artsource and all sorts of places.
Yeah, I better mention everyone who's helped me. All my family and friends have just been incredible in the past few weeks. Like, I've such an amazing support group around me. Like, my mom, my god lover, has been up in the attic with me every day, and I used to packing orders and printing labels, and my dad's running up and down to printers. My friends have been over packing orders. I had my 12-year-old cousin sticking stamps on envelopes the other day. Like, everyone has gotten involved. It's just been amazing.
Yeah. And if you had one of those hugs, stamps on the cover of that card, that'd be a perfect combination for me.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Caoimhe Hennessy, congratulations.
Thanks so much.
And thanks for bringing a bit of sunshine and light and smiliness into our lives. Thank you for that.
No problem.
That's it from us. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. What day is today? Tuesday, which means that Cormac is flying solo today. He's here on his own. As I say, we're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.